The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
Thank you very much, and good Sabbath, everyone. I want to remind those people that might be joining us electronically on the internet, on the phone hookup, that we still are seeking sponsors for the Quest for Truth television program. Contact us. It is relatively little effort on your part and does not cost anything. Any fees incurred is paid for by the church, and so we just need people in the area to act as a sponsor to support the program and to get this message out to as many people as possible. And so something that was mentioned in the program today was social distancing, and this was mentioned briefly, but it's become something I think that you and I, we've heard dozens, hundreds of times, probably if you added them up over the last several months, and nearly everyone seems to be practicing some form of social distancing in one way or another today. And this, of course, all depends on the state, sometimes the nation, depends on the city or even the place of business. But there have been rules that have been established in various areas in order to keep people safe or to keep people in their place. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control, says that the definition of social distancing is limiting face-to-face contact with others. And those limitations vary in their forms depending on the state or the place of business. But I think many of these areas have much of the same basic guidelines. And as an example, I have a second job in a government building downtown. It's a fairly large office at its full capacity. There is probably 50 to 60 people. For the last few months, we've been working at low capacity. I've been one of the few that were first called in to work, where we started with four people in the office, and then we went to eight. We're up to 20, and this next week we're going to even more than that. But when I returned to work, some of these guidelines were changing, and I received a memo just about, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, that stated the following regarding all places around the country that serve in the function of taking the 2020 census. And some of this memo says things like that a face covering, for example, I have the memo right here. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just thought it might be of interest to read a few of them. A face covering, referring to the cloth masks, must be worn at all times when walking through indoor common areas, which include hallways, restrooms, break rooms, cafeteria, etc. When entering the building, employees may need to lower their face covering to allow guards to conduct the badge authentication. Now, even after this came out, within just a few days after it coming out, this rule slightly changed, and it went to a face covering being highly or strongly recommended, but because of certain beliefs, they were not going to require everybody to wear a face covering. Of course, some of the people in management would kind of frown upon those people that did not, but there's no reprimand, and nothing, it's not going to be something that is forced. In any case, it went on, this memo went on to say, when employees are seated at their desk or working in their primary work area, they must remain at least 6 feet away from other employees and 6 feet away in common traffic areas. And a face covering, they say, is not required outside, but staff should be careful to remain at least 6 feet apart in designated areas. Public areas, such as smoking areas. It says that employees can remove the face covering to eat and drink, but must remain at least 6 feet away from others. They also ask that you disinfect your work area prior to using and prior to departing from, so your desk, wiping down the desk and the keyboard, the mouse, the phone, all of that, what have you. It's not limited to those items, those pieces of furniture, but those ones need to be included, chairs, door handles, etc. Please adhere to all signage within the building, including traffic patterns, queuing instructions. I think we may have seen some of these in some of the stores, how they have lines of how where to stand when you're going to check out. Or some stores, I've noticed some grocery stores have arrows of like walk down the aisle this way and come down this way. And not everybody obeys. So it's pretty difficult. I mean, we grew up. This is new and, frankly, a little strange in some ways, but no gathering, they went on to say, no gathering in the hallway or in the common areas, no physical greetings such as handshakes, hugs, or fist bumps are to be done in the workplace. And so this is interesting, and there's mixed opinions about these guidelines of social distancing. Some might say that they are excessive. Others would say that they are not strict enough. But in their proper context, such guidelines are not wrong if they're attempting to avoid becoming infected with a potentially lethal virus. And this virus can potentially be lethal to some people, especially with those that have underlying conditions, health conditions. But a similar thing could be said about other behaviors that present themselves in much the same way as a virus. And this was mentioned briefly in the program today. It's wickedness, iniquity, sin, if you will. Immoral behavior is rampant in this country. It is rampant around the world today, and it is spreading faster and worse, far worse than any virus that we have seen to date. Now, what few realize is that viruses, they have much in common with sin. They really do. And I'd given a sermon on this subject about 9 years ago. It's hard to believe when I looked up the topic. 9 years ago, I had given this sermon at one of our Feast of Tabernacles location about viruses and their comparison to sin. And I did a whole PowerPoint presentation and showed some images. I have a few images today. I'll try to show them to you. But I thought it would be interesting to revisit a little bit of this subject. And I'm not going to go into all the detail that I did before, but I think some points we should think about this in light of what's going on in the world, both with viruses and with iniquity. So I had found that viruses have similar characteristics to people that are infected with sinful behaviors. For example, viruses spread by coming into contact with the host. And while all viruses can be transmitted physically, there are some viruses, as we have become aware, that are more tenacious than others. And these can be spread through the air. They are called airborne illnesses, transmitted through the air. And isn't it interesting that Satan is called what? The prince of the power of the air. And the reason he has this title is because he spreads iniquity like an airborne virus. And we have the perfect receptors in our mind, in the human mind, to be able to pick up on his signals, his influencing evil, of hatred, of sin, of lust, wrongful type forms of lust. And so the processes of virion, and virion is basically a term for a single virus. If you took a single one, I'll show you an image in a moment. The processes of a virion also appear, they sound, and they seem to be evil in how they work. And there are three morphological forms of viruses that affect human beings. And the ones that affect us are the adenovirus. This is also known as the retrovirus. Influenza, we're all familiar with influenza. The flu is what we call it in short. And there is the third form, which is called a complex virus or virion, also known as bacteriophage. And it's also classified in the scientific world as T4. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But the illustrated image that you and I have seen much of lately is the influenza virus. And here's a picture of it. I'm sure you've seen it dozens of times recently on the news, on the internet, in memes, texts, what have you. We've seen images of this. This is not, I think this is an enhanced image of an actual influenza virus. The COVID-19 would look like this. Not with the color. I think they color these images so that people can see the different details of the structures. But that's what this the influenza virus looks like. The adenovirus looks very similar. If you were to look at them both under a microscope, they look very similar, but they're not exactly the same. But they still function similarly, even though they are structurally different. And although all of these viruses have different mechanisms, different body parts, if you will, They all work in a similar way to go through a four-step process. And this process is to attach itself to a host or a host cell, to infect that host, to replicate itself, and to spread throughout the host. Let's go over to Genesis 1. Genesis 1. We should all get there pretty quickly. One way and of attachment, at least for the influenza, and I believe the adenovirus works in a similar way, is through these tiny microscopic spikes. You can't really see them in the enhanced image that we saw that I just showed you of the influenza virus. But through these tiny microscopic spikes, they penetrate the wall of a cell, of the host's cell. And then after they penetrate it, the cell is forced to absorb the virus, to take it in, to become a part. The two become one in this way. But then the cell becomes dysfunctional as the virus replicates itself and then sends out more of itself out into the rest of the body of the host to infect other cells. And of course, this eventually leads to illness. Another method used by virion is called the lock and key function. And it's kind of sinister how this works. Basically, how it works is it's kind of like picking the lock. They have tiny little molecular keys that they shift and they move back and forth to try to unlock the wall of the cell in order to let itself in so that it will creep into the cell and the receptors of the cell open up the door and they allow it to come in to the cell. And it's in this way it infects and it goes through the same process. It injects its RNA into the cell, which weaves to the DNA of the cell, and it causes it to be dysfunctional, to not work for the benefit of the host, but instead to work against the host, to fight against it, and to replicate and send out other virion out into the body. And of course, this leads to a variety of symptoms. We're all aware. Many of us have had the flu, and so once you start to become infected with many of these virion, it could cause fever, aches, pain, sore throat, runny nose. Some more severe symptoms could be neurologically, where people might twitch or they shakes. Maybe they people lose function sometimes of their body parts. You know, polio was a virus, and it caused people to become crippled, and some recovered, some did not from such viruses. Now, what is perhaps the most sinister of these classes of virion is the complex, the bacteriophage, the T4. And I have here an illustrated image of this virion. And the image on your left, is what the virion would look like in its expanded or its normal state. It's kind of expanded. The one on your right is what it would look like when it becomes attached to a cell. And what it does when it becomes attached to a cell, with its little tiny little legs that kind of look like legs of a spider, is it sends down this little spring-like looking structure here, collapses, and it brings down this spike penetrating the wall of the cell and then injecting its RNA into the cell. Seems quite evil, doesn't it? The way that it works, it's not very pleasant. I have a couple of other images here that are kind of interesting. This is, I believe, this was taken with an electron microscope. This is an actual image of the T4 virion, as it's had already. You could see it's attached itself to a cell wall here, and it already had collapsed, and it's injected. You can't really see it. I'll pass these around. One of these, I believe, you can see they colored where it actually, you can see the spike where it had injected its RNA into the cell. This is a larger image of one just kind of floating here in molecular space or cellular space. It's hard to see, but you can kind of see how the legs are kind of just waving out here, I believe, and out here. But it looks really evil. Something out of a science fiction movie, doesn't it? This one is, I thought it was kind of interesting. It's a little platoon of these T4 virion that are landing upon this cell here, and most of the ones that have landed, you can see, have collapsed already. And I think this might be the one. Yeah, when I pass it around, you can see it has these little this little green area where it shows where the RNA is being injected into the host cell. And I'll go ahead and pass these around if anybody wants to look at them. So we see that there are some things in the quote-unquote natural world that represent evil. And we are quite aware of this, that we look at the animal world, for example, and you have creatures such as the eagle and the ox and horse that are quite noble-looking creatures. They look like animals of honor that deserve respect. And then you have other creatures like scorpions and spiders and snakes that they seem quite evil. And not only in their behavior, just the way they appear and how they trap, they kill, they inject poison and into their victims. And so we see that this can also be seen on a molecular or cellular level, that there are some things that really are quite pleasant to their appearance, and they actually do a lot of good. If you examine anybody that's examined biology or even in chemistry, I think they talk a little bit about cells and how they function. It's just amazing. It's like a factory that is just doing positive, wonderful things for the human body. And then you have things like this, like viruses that are kind of just creep in unaware. They lay in wait to infect the host, and they invade, and they seek to destroy and to replicate themselves throughout the host. And so when God recreated the flora and the fauna during the 6 days of creation in Genesis 1. After each day, notice in Genesis 1 that God looked at what he had done, and he considered what he had done, and he said and thought, this is good. This is very good. Genesis 1, verse 10, after, creating the firmament of the heavens, the sky, and the waters under the heavens that gathered together, and the dry land appeared, and God saw that it was good, at the end of verse 10. And then he went on to create more things, the grass, the trees, the fruit and vegetables and all kinds of things and herbs. In verse 12, he looked at this according to its kind, all of these things he had done. He saw that it was good. In verse 18, it goes on to say, after making, putting the sun and the moon in their orbit, in the way, the planets in their orbit around the sun and the moon, setting the stars, all of these things in their respective positions, he looked at it all and said, and saw, that it was good. Verse 21, the same thing, after making all these creatures and the waters that abound and the winged birds and all these things, he saw that it was good. Verse 25 goes on to say the same thing. All of these beasts and the animals and all of the things that we benefit from living on this planet as the peak of God's physical creation, the pinnacle of God's physical creation, humankind. And he looked at all of these things, all of these animals that he created for us, and he said that they were good. And then finally, in verse 31, after giving all of these things to humankind, he saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. So for God to say all of these things are very good, I find it a little difficult to believe that he would have created, viruses and said, this is good. This is going to try to creep in and destroy the hosts of the creation that I have made. So sometime later, after this, the first man and woman had sinned, and we see that thorns and thistles, it says, began to spring up from the earth. Life became very difficult for mankind. And we also see that there was a change in animal behavior. At that time, that animals began to rip and tear at one another. And we know this is the truth, that there must be a change, because when there will be a restoration of all things, it says what about those animals that rip and tear at each other? They're going to eat grass. They're not going to do that anymore. And so we see that that is the way God designed it. And so it's my belief that it was likely at that time, after humankind had sinned, that microorganisms began to change, that there was a change, a spread, even of viruses found not just in humans, but in the flora and the fauna of the earth. Genesis 4 So we see that because mankind had chosen to accept both evil and good as viable when Adam and Eve took of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, this means that they were ready and willing and they desired to accept both. We'll decide for ourselves what is good and what is evil. And same thing has been going on ever since. And as we see, societies change and people are accepting more evil than ever and calling it good, saying this is a good thing. And so after that, this occurred, though, we see that both good and evil exists in the very fabric of God's creation, that he allowed it to exist. Not that God created evil, but he allowed it to exist, to come forth. And we see it in the structure of the behavior of certain animals, and in our case, in the discussion today, the behavior and the structure of virion. There is a representation of this found in viruses. And it behaves, I suggest, in much the same way that sin does. And so virion, it lay in wait. It waits for a host to infect. And similarly, sin lays in wait. It lies in wait for a host to infect. Listen to what God told Cain. And this is before Cain had murdered his brother Abel. He said this in Genesis 4, in verse 7, said to Cain, if you do well, in other words, if you do good, if you are righteous, will you not be accepted? Of course, of course. And if you do not do well, well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you. It wants you. It wants to infect you. But you should rule over it. Have temperance. Take control of your thoughts. Take control of your behavior. And in this way, we see that the same thing could be said about you and I. If we do well, God will accept us. Yes. 2 + 2 = 4. It's an easy equation. But if we do not do well, sin is infecting us. It lies at the door. It's trying to infect our lives. And its desire is for us. Its desire is to take over the host. But we have to take control. We have to do what we can to take control of it. And so something similar is said when we're trying to avoid becoming sick. We do certain things to avoid becoming sick, whether it's, you know, social distancing or putting on a mask, as people do in certain days. But we wash our hands, right? Some people wash their hands multiple times a day. I do. And this is something that helps us to become infected with illness, especially when there is a potential threat. When illness is spreading, we know it's there. But we also do other things to keep our defenses up, such as eating well, having a good diet, exercising, you know, eating antioxidants, or some people take probiotics. These things can be very helpful. And these are ways to prevent the infection of virus. And similar, there are ways to prevent the becoming infected with sin. And how is that? Through righteousness, to keep the commandments. This is how we keep ourselves from becoming infected with sin. So when we consistently keep the commandments, we have behavior that is called righteousness. It means being right, doing what is right. And we can, in this way, we can attain a level of defense against the virion of sin. But when we continually break the commandments, when we're not really trying, we just kind of, half-hearted about the whole situation, well, our defenses are lowered in this way, and we can become infected, vulnerable to infection, I should say. 1 John 3, once a virus attaches itself to a host, it injects the RNA, as I had said, into the cell. It interweaves itself with the DNA of the cell, and it reforms the structure to do work differently. Instead of being a little factory that works to the benefit of the host, it becomes a factory that pumps out more virion. And then these scouts are sent out into the microscopic molecular atmosphere of the body, and they're sent out to infect other cells. And the result is symptoms of illness. And more often than not, it's pretty rare, but more often than not, the symptoms will become worse before it gets better. And sin works in much the same way. If it is allowed to attach itself to a host, it can replicate. The sin can continue. Other sins could be the result. It could, because it begins to reshape the thoughts of the host, to reshape the behaviors of the host, if it's left alone, if it's allowed to proliferate. Our desires can change, our opinions can be altered about different things, our understanding of righteousness even can become skewed if we are infected by such virion. If not dealt with, sin can spread and it will eventually cause damage, much like viruses will eventually cause symptoms as it damages the host. Now notice how John put it. Now John wasn't speaking specifically of viruses, but he was speaking of sin. And there's similarities in what he says here. In 1 John 3, in verse 9, it says, whoever has been born, it's the expression begotten actually, is better translated, whoever has been begotten of God does not sin. For God's seed remains in him, and he cannot sin because he has been begotten of God. Now, it doesn't mean that we never will sin. What it means is whoever has been begotten of God has the seed of God's Spirit, cannot continue to practice sin. It doesn't work that way. The two don't go together. You know, we're going to make mistakes on occasion. We will sin on occasion. You know, hopefully more, less than we did in the past, and because we're working, we're all at different stages of perfection, of maturity. But it's not something that we should just allow to continue. You don't continue to practice sin when you choose to obey God. And then it goes on to say in verse 10, in this way, the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God. So when we become infected by a virus, if somebody becomes infected by a virus, symptoms eventually become manifest. And it becomes obvious then that, well, we've got something. You can even tell that certain things, as certain things change in our life, how we feel, how we maybe even appear. And so the same thing is with God. When we're begotten of God and we practice as a way of life, it's apparent. It becomes clear. But when we do not follow God, it's manifest that we're not following God. And he refers to it as being children of God or children of the devil being manifest. So sin, like a virus, is a part of our world, isn't it? And though viruses are a part of our world, I don't think that you and I should consider them to be something that is a part of our nature, because human nature is tainted. It's tainted in a variety of ways. It isn't the way God designed it to be. It's influenced now in a variety of ways. And so John related that sin, it should be treated like something that is unnatural to us. It's not natural behavior to those people who have been begotten of God. Now, there are three types of viral infection, and I'm going to briefly mention them. There is latent infection, chronic infection, and slow infection. Latent infections are persistent infections in which a symptomless period is followed by reactivation of the virus with accompanying symptoms. Chronic infections are when symptoms of the virus are manifest at all times. And then slow infections occur when the virus gradually increases in amount over a long time, during which no significant symptoms are apparent, but eventually a progression of the disease ensues. So these types of infections here can illustrate, if you will, different levels of sin. There are levels of sin. Some sins are worse than others. John said that there is that all unrighteousness is sin. They all fall into that category. But he said there is sin leading to death, and there is sin that does not lead to death. Doesn't mean that we should go, hey, what are those sins that don't lead to death? Maybe I can have some of those in my life. No, that's not the case at all. But it's some are worse than others. It's clear when God gave the judgments, when he talked about, well, if this sin is committed, the person is stoned, death. When another sin is committed, well, you need to repay, you need to do something to make it up. And so chronic infections of sin they're easy for believers to see. It's easy to spot. You and I can spot it pretty easily. They're constant in certain people's lifestyles or behaviors, chronic. Slow infections, though, these are sins that, well, they might not seem all that bad. Perhaps they're kind of maybe somebody would call them a misdemeanor instead of a felony. I have a comment about that in Q&A, misdemeanors as opposed to felonies. But these are sins that people think, well, they're not really all that bad, so people might allow them to remain, to be a part of their lives. Eventually, though, it will move into other parts of their lives. Things will get worse. More and more damage will be done if the sin isn't dealt with, because symptoms of the sin will become manifest. And even if it's not right away, it might take years. It might take decades. Depends. But it will come. Latent infections are likened, I think, to sins that are harbored, you know, things that we might desire to keep. We want to hang on to them, and everything seems okay. All things continue as they were. You know, maybe we might even begin to redefine the sin. Maybe it's not really a sin. Nothing bad is happening, you know. Our conscience can become moved in this way. Our thoughts change about the behavior. We try to reclassify it. Try to justify ourselves. But because it is sin, and because it is sin that is not dealt with, the issue will come up again, it will come up eventually, and the manifestation will be symptoms, problems in our life. Romans 6 The human body can attain immunity to many viruses. As our cells fight the virus, as it enters, the invaders, if you will, our body has a self-defense mechanism, God built in, that learn how to overcome the virus, learn how to defeat it as it learns of its ways, and then it sends out a task force throughout the system to try to fight the virus so that it cannot spread and cause long-lasting chronic, that is, illness. And so it is that you and I, we can build up a resistance to many forms of sin. And hopefully it's not through experience, although some people will say experience is the best teacher. It's really the hardest teacher. And we had talked about this the other day with my daughters. The best teacher is actually to learn from the experience of others and to learn what works and does not work through that. That way we don't have to go through the mess ourselves. Still, I think many of us do actually have to experience it. We might think, oh, it's going to be different for me. I'm different. I have a better perspective than the ancients of old, and I'll be able to manage this. But eventually we see. And so as we work to overcome sin, we can train our minds to resist it. We can build up a resistance to this type of virus that comes from the temptations of the devil. We say, no, I'm not going to do it. I've seen what happens. I've seen the symptoms. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep my distance from that. Keep your distance. Keep your distance. So viruses, they do not only affect human beings. I think we're all well aware of this, that there are viruses for nearly every species, I think, of the earth. Fish, trees, animals, horses, insects. viruses for all of them. And all living things, it seems, are susceptible to contagions in some way, in one way or another. And to me, this relates to the fact that the spread of evil, this affects more than just human beings, doesn't it? Yes, our wicked behavior affects everything in our environment, everything living, and even things that are not living. When you consider the unethical, the immoral behaviors that have affected the entire planet, we've seen this firsthand, haven't we? We've seen it in war that ravages areas of the earth, of communities that it destroys, places that are pummeled by explosives, trampled down by tanks, and even on rare occasions, the use of atomic and nuclear weapons will damage the environment for decades to come. Everything in the area, mutated plants and animals in the areas. And we've also seen how corruption and greed leads to developing chemicals and industries that don't really care a whole lot about the environments that they pollute. And it leads to damaging ecosystems, rivers, water, streams. In fact, I read an interesting article. It's really long. It was like 30 pages long. But it was an interesting article about plastics and how much that is hurting people, but we don't really feel it all yet because plastics are still, you know, relatively new. But they've been around for decades. But in the quantities that they are made today, this is something new to the entire planet. And in one study or report, I had said that most people actually take in about a credit card's worth of plastic every week in just the water you drink because it gets broken down more and more and more and more. And it takes like hundreds of years to actually biodegrade. But you can't really see it unless under a microscope, but it gets through filters and everything. And it gets right into our food, into the things that we put into our mouths, sometimes on a daily basis. And so we see that sin damages plants, animals, and the environment. It's not just damaging humanity, although, you know, this is humanity is the focus of God's creation, but it's damaging everything that he has made. And for this reason, he needs to return and restore all things to natural balance the way he designed it. But unlike many viruses that you and I can attain immunity to, sadly, we will never be immune to the effects of sin in this world at this present time. We won't. And so that way, for this reason, we always have to have our defenses up against it. We always have to be on guard to keep our distance from it. And our best defense against evil, the evil of sin, is to practice the righteousness of Christ. And notice what Paul wrote in Romans 6. Romans 6, verse 16. He said, "Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves or servants to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey? Whether of sin, leading to death, or of obedience, leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, servants of sin, before being called, before receiving a seed of his Spirit, yet you obeyed from the heart that the form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you have become slaves or servants of righteousness." And this refers to who we serve. What did Christ say? "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." It is his righteousness because they are his laws that he established not only for himself, but for all of creation. Every human being was given these laws. And so this is how we can put up our defenses by keeping the commandments. And in this way, we learn that we serve God. We don't serve the self. We don't serve the desires of other people. We are servants of righteousness, serving God. But in this way, when we do, we will serve the best interest of self. We will naturally, therefore, serve the best interest of other people, even though they might not know it, even though we might not know it, they might not agree with it. But when we are righteous, living by the commandments, we are serving our own best interests and theirs, as well as God's. It all works in harmony. It's like a perfect set of laws. So when we consider social distancing, consider exactly what it is that we should keep our distance from. When it comes to certain viruses, we have to keep our distance from them. People are learning that. When you don't, you can get sick. You can become infected. Maybe you'll get over it. Maybe you won't. But when it comes to what viruses can portray, found in immoral, unethical, wicked behavior, Paul said in Romans 12:9 to flee immorality. He said, abhor what is evil and cling to what is good. And in this way, we seek those things that are good in the world. Because there is good in the world. Things are becoming worse and worse, but there are things that are lovely and pure and good. And Paul said in Philippians to focus on these things. Whatever things are pure and lovely and good, focus on them. Think about them. And work with them. And Paul, in Hebrews 10, if let's go over to Hebrews 10. I had Mia write this on the board back there. Kind of a theme, I think, of today's main message. Paul encouraged people of like mind to cling to each other, to cling to one another as friends, as family, as brethren. And he said this in Hebrews 10, verse 24. He said, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting, helping, being with one another, being there for each other, and so much more as you see the day approaching. As things get worse and worse, let's do it even more. Let's pick it up. Let's be there for one another more often, more frequently, and in more ways. In this scripture that I'd read, it's often quoted to advocate Sabbath gatherings or congregating on the Sabbath, and it does apply, but it doesn't only apply to the seventh day. It's not alone. The word Sabbath isn't even used in the scripture, but it does apply to the Sabbath. This scripture can be used to be said of any day of the week. You know, even if we're not in person, I mean, we have the technology we have today to make phone calls, to send texts, to send letters. We can reach halfway around the world and back in just a few seconds. Amazing. And so we should keep in touch with each other in this way. Drop a note to one another. Send a text. Make a phone call, you know. We all get tied up, I think, in the tyranny of the urgent. I know I do. Seems like, you know, this time of year, or this year anyway, I'm busier than ever. And I was even talking to a gentleman last night, Glenn Pratt, from Hamilton, Ohio. And it was a really nice conversation we had. And I told him, I said, let's talk more, but do me a favor, give me a call. You know, drop a line, because I get caught up in things. I might work 13 or 14 hours a day sometimes. By the time I'm done, I'm kind of spent, and I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to call so-and-so, unless they called me or sent me a text and said, hey, give me a call. Then I'll do that, and I enjoy those conversations. You know, some of the highlights of the day to talk to people of like mind. And so we should reach out to one another, be there for one another, let them know we're thinking about them. And to support one another in this way. Because sometimes, you know, the best support we can give is just being there to talk to them, to listen. To listen. And so we should make time for one another. And when we do, we'll see that not only do we feel better, we feel good about it, but they'll be very glad that we reached out. I mean, I think we all can relate. We're like, oh, it was so nice to hear from them. Wow, thanks. Thanks for the message. 2 Corinthians 6. With all of the needs, the urgencies, if you want to call it that, sometimes they're not so urgent, but I think we feel pressure to get things done. But with everything that needs to be done in this busier than ever world, it seems like we often get swept up and we don't interact with people of like mind as often as we should. And perhaps even just interacting with, you know, decent folk that we know that might be outside the church, perhaps we don't even interact with them as much as we should. Many times, this isn't by choice, of course. You know, many of us have jobs outside of the home, and we have to go to work. We have to interact with people that not all of them are believers. Most of them are not, and those that are likely are not true believers. Occasionally, we'll come across somebody that has very similar beliefs. Even when I was hired for this last job several months ago, it was interesting. The person that called me actually was a Sabbath keeper who kept the holy days. I thought, wow, now, it's not too common that you get that. And so I was encouraged by that. But the point is, sometimes we don't have a choice. We need to get out and work in different environments. We need to get out and shop and do things. But we need to remember, you know, where our priorities are. Who are the people we should be staying in contact with? Where are the best environments we should go for entertainment or just to relax or to enjoy some company? Who should we be talking to? Because Paul wrote, and I'm not going there, I'm going to read a different scripture, but I have this in my notes, 1 Corinthians 15:33, Paul said, evil company corrupts good habits. And then he goes on to say, awake to righteousness and do not sin, because some do not have the knowledge of God. So be careful of who you're hanging out with, who you're desiring to, you know, spend time with, because evil company can corrupt your habits. Awake to righteousness. That is where our focus should be. We should be awake to righteousness, because there are many who do not have the knowledge of God. In 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, I'm going to read, several of these scriptures. Paul said, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. In other words, do not devote just as much time to those people that are not believers than you do to those people that are believers. Now again, this is not talking about, we have to go to work. We have to make a living to support ourselves and our families. We don't have a choice sometimes. We can choose sometimes the environment. If the environment says, you know, Mr. Polici has told us on a few occasions where he got into a job and he said, I can't work there. I'm leaving. Good for you. You should leave if you feel that way. We should. But, you know, if we can work there and it's not affecting us and, you know, there's decent people that work there, we have to go there. We don't have a choice. But Paul's talking about here, when you have a choice, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Belial is speaking to a person of low esteem who has immoral values. Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God had said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Come out from among them and be separate, says the Eternal. Don't touch what is that unclean thing, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you. You shall be my sons and daughters, says the Eternal Almighty. So a principle of unclean and clean meats is to learn to discern between good and evil. Good being clean, obviously, evil being unclean. And this is a principle that is not understood by everyone, but it's thoroughly explained in our booklet, and I have a copy of it right here. It's not an advertisement, just a reminder to people. We ask the question, and we answer it. Why the unclean and the clean? Is it just physical? Is it just health? Or is there something else going on? Are there multiple things going on? There are. And we should understand this principle. And I think the cover, the illustration, does a pretty good job of kind of setting that in motion. You have this pig up here that is wallowing in the mud, its face all covered in mud, and you have these sweet, you know, looking at lambs down here. And then you have this gentleman up here holding a gun with a gas mask on, representing a toxic and violent environment. And then you have this nice family down here having a pleasant picnic, some decent folk down there. And so there's this principle that you and I need to understand, that we need to practice it every single day of our lives. Why the unclean and the clean? There are many reasons for it. They're all important, but this one, I think, is the most. It's often understood or misunderstood by people, but it's essential. It's truly a primary goal in life is to make a difference, as God said, between the unclean and the clean. Revelation 18. When speaking of a variety of systems of beliefs and traditions and behaviors that are ungodly, God used symbolism in the book of Revelation, a great whore. Mystery Babylon the Great represents the evils of false religion propagated by Babylonian mystery religion that has infected every form of religion that is not biblically sound. And in Revelation 18, verse 3 and 4, it says, "For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication," referring to the whore, "and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, giving in to her false religion, her immoral, unethical values. And the merchants of the earth have become rich through abundance of her luxury, the greed, the corruption." Not just in industry, but in government. People becoming rich, immeasurably rich through corruption. And I heard another voice, as it says, from heaven in verse 4. I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and receive her plagues." What is the reason for these plagues that are going to come? What is the reason for the seals, for the trumpet plagues, for the bowl plagues? The reason is because the world is infected by a virus that's called sin, wicked behavior, and it leads to dysfunction. It leads to pain, suffering, and death. And this virus will be eradicated. Sadly, the only way to get rid of it entirely is by force. That it has gotten to the, it's getting and will have gotten to the point where that is all people will understand. They are going to need shock and awe to realize how wicked the world has become. It is going to be a horrific time, and you and I are given the opportunity to avoid it. We don't have to be a part of that great tribulation. We can avoid it. And the only way to avoid it is to stop sinning. Sounds simple enough. I know sometimes it's many times it's harder than it sounds. But keep your defenses up. Keep your distance from the virus of sin. Malachi 3, for a final scripture, last book of the Old Testament books, Malachi chapter 3. Our focus each day of the week should be to keep ourselves from evil. And this doesn't mean that we need to become recluse, that we need to cut off all communication with people outside of the church. We're in the world. We need to be in the world. We should be in the world, but not of the world, not participants in the ways of the world that are contrary to the way of God. And so, you and I, we have to go to work. We have to shop. We need to spend hours every single day with people that might be unbelievers. We have to interact with others, and we should interact with others. Because how could we be a light to the world if we got a, I don't know, a home up in the mountain somewhere and cut ourselves off from civilization. What good is that going to show anyone? It would be like the person who, you know, received the pearl of great price, or not the pearl of great price, but received the talents or the coins from God. The example gives of going off and hiding it, saying, "Oh, I know I have this wonderful gift, but I'm just going to hide it, put it away. I don't want anybody to know I have it." What good is that? God comes back and taking it away, giving it to somebody who's going to do something with it. And that's it. So we have to be out in the world and we have to interact with others. But when we hear about this thing, it's kind of new. I mean, technically it's not new, but it's become very prevalent and in some cases extreme, some cases not. This thing of social distancing, we should use this. When you hear that, use it as a metaphor to understand, well, what should we be distancing ourselves from? Is it viruses? Well, yeah, of course. We don't want to get sick. What about wickedness? What about those wrong forms of music? What about the bad movies, the immoral values that are promoted today? Shouldn't we be keeping ourselves from them? We should. Keep your distance from unjust, disrespectful, lewd behaviors that are becoming more and more common. And in many cases, we see they are becoming socially acceptable. I heard one news story this week promoting the idea that we should do away with misdemeanors. That we should make those not a crime anymore because we're spending too much time. And you know, those people that got hurt by police, and police brutality is something that needs to be dealt with. But those people that got hurt, they were being arrested for misdemeanors. So we should do away with those. We'll have less people getting hurt. They reject the fact that those misdemeanors led to confrontations where the people resisted and the police felt threatened. So they had to use force. Maybe not in every case, but in many or most of those cases, they had to use force. But you see how things are getting worse and worse. We shouldn't call evil anymore. Those things are good. Those things are, everybody does those without even thinking about them. They're just okay. It's the decline of civilization. Is what it is what we see happening. But don't accept it. Don't accept this decline of civilization that's becoming more and more uncivilized. If you will put it that way, set your sights on God. And with that, set your sights on those things of God and those people of God, the people of like mind who have the same values, who are not weakened, who have their defenses up like we should have our defenses up against the virion of sin. Malachi 3, verse 16, says this, "For the eternal God of Israel says," that's chapter 2, verse 16, 3, 16, "Then those who feared, revered the eternal, spoke to one another, and the eternal listened, and he heard them. And then a book of remembrance was written before God for those who fear the eternal and those who meditate on his name." And he goes on to say, "They shall be mine, says the eternal of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels, my precious stones, my precious people. I will spare them. They will be spared of the plagues. And I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. Then you shall again discern between the righteous and the wicked. Make a difference between the unclean and the clean. Between one who serves God and the one who does not serve him." So this is our calling. To make a difference between right and wrong. Between good and evil. Between the unclean and the clean. And to keep your distance from the virus of sin. And the way to do that is through the righteousness of Christ.